I was fortunate to play at a very good basketball school. And then you go away and you coach and you think that, you know, if I ever had the chance to coach here at Maryland, it'd be great. But I never thought I'd have the opportunity to come back and coach at Maryland.
Trimble with 3 seconds. Trimble for the win!
A sellout crowd of 43,000 cheers Queen Elizabeth and her consort Prince Philip, very special guests of the University of Maryland.
90 seconds to go. Vasquez for three in the lead. 78-77 Maryland.
I believe that the Terrapin is the loveliest, perhaps the most beautiful of all trees.
There's Wells to jump out, make the depth, and slam it. Brown will take it inside the five. Touchdown, Maryland. Terrapins beat Virginia Tech.
And no handshake for the coin toss from Maryland before the game today. It is on.
Okay, grab shell, dude.
Ha-ha! Righteous! Righteous!
And breaking free for the touchdown is Jay Sean Jones on his first touch as a Terp.
You're listening to Inside Maryland Sports Radio.
The IMS Radio Maryland basketball reverse jinx continues to be perfect through five conference games as the Terps beat ranked Iowa and recently ranked Rutgers at home to get to 18-4 and a tie for first place in the Big Ten. Also, you may not have noticed, but it was the second and final signing day in football on Wednesday. Maryland has officially signed two more kids to the 2020 class while picking up more commitments in the 2021 class. Plus, a new coach and some positional swapping as they take a breath and likely a short vacation before we start thinking about spring football in College Park. And last but certainly not least, we will talk to a special guest, former Maryland running back Javon Leak, about his career here, his NFL draft preparations, and everything in between in a few minutes. But for now, we have a jam-packed show for you for your listening pleasure as we are IMS Radio. And today we have with us the host and publisher of InsideMarylandSports.com, Jeff Ehrman, football and football recruiting reporter Ahmed Ghafir. And as always, I am your host, Paul Douglas. Jeff, we came on the air, I guess if you can call it the air anymore, I don't know, it's a podcast, like 3 weeks ago, and we basically buried Mark Turgeon, and he has promptly thrown it all in our faces. This week with an 82-72 win over Iowa and a 56-51 win over Rutgers. So what's up with that?
I think we get the credit because he got a little feisty after that podcast. I think it was like the next day where he
was bitching about the media, right? Like, do we count?
Yeah, is that us? Media, and then I think it was us. I think we lit a fire. So you're welcome to everybody.
Yeah.
It's crazy because they were so good early against obviously kind of middling competition, and then they looked so bad for that little stretch. And I mean, a few things happened. Jalen Smith has turned into like a poor man's Joe Smith. So that's the biggest thing. He switched the offense to five, you know, going five out and kind of just completely given up on throwing it in the post. So the offense has been better. They're scoring more points, even though they still aren't making many threes. And they don't seem to have that doom and gloom cloud. Even Turgeon himself, I've never heard him talk about confidence. So, I mean, it's every press conference. I don't know if he got a hold of a sports psychologist or somebody had a talk with him, but I'm not even joking. Right around Christmas time, he started talking about give my guys confidence. I got to give my guys confidence. And it's a constant theme. And it's working. I mean, they are playing much more confident than they were before. The schedule helped. You know, they had a few, you know, Northwestern, and the tougher games have been pretty much at home until Friday at Illinois. We'll get to that. So they have completely turned it around. I'm not going to completely jump on the bandwagon because we all know what happens every time I do that. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to complain too much. People still do. And, you know, they're just kind of wounded after all this time. And so there's still a lot of people pretty negative, and there's clearly some major flaws. Like I mentioned, the shooting mostly, but, you know, they're as hot as anybody in the conference and, you know, almost anybody in the country right now, back in the top 10. So it's been a good few weeks for them.
Yeah. It's honestly just been really strange to watch because Maryland has turned into this, like, you know, computer rankings juggernaut.
And then they go out and now they're, you know, they're beating ranked teams consistently. Now in the Big Ten, everybody's ranked for a week and then out of the rankings for a week, then back in the rankings for a week because, you know, everybody's losing on the road, especially. And it's just kind of a giant cluster, basically. But they worked their way up to first place in the Big Ten, tied with Illinois. So that'll be a showdown in Champaign on Friday night. I think it's fair to say the team feels a little more aggressive than it did earlier in the season. And part of that is the fact that they're willing to go up there and just keep chucking those threes. And if they don't go down, they keep chucking some more, because that's basically, I mean, that's what they have, right? There isn't really a second bullet in that gun. You know, you've run in that five out and you've got a lot of guys doing a lot of screening and moving around on the outside. If the driving lanes aren't there, like say they weren't in the first half against Rutgers, that's what you got to go with. And you just got to hope they go down.
Yeah, and it's amazing that they're winning. I mean, part of it is everybody's shooting poorly nationally. 3-point shots are, you know, the lane that's shot is.
It is an epidemic. You wouldn't think that 6 inches or 9 inches or whatever they move back would be that big of a difference, but it is.
Yeah, the scores are down everywhere. So a lot of fans just watch Maryland. They don't watch other teams. So, you know, they have nothing to compare it to, but they aren't shooting. I mean, Eric Ayala is obviously in a deep, deep mental funk with his shooting. Wiggins still hasn't really, you know, he's gotten a little better lately. He still really hasn't come around. Jalen Smith has turned out to be by far their best 3-point shooter, which is pretty crazy. But yeah, they're going to live by the three a lot of the time. They don't have any, aside from Cowan, who gets to the line more than anybody else in the Big Ten, they don't really have a slasher. Morsell's a slasher when you get out on the break, but they don't have a break you down in the half court guy other than Cowan. They don't have another guy who can score inside at all besides Jalen Smith. So that to me is, I'm getting ahead of ourselves, but that's a big concern looking down in March when you don't have a third option at all, really. You just hope one of those guys comes in and, like Morsell did the other night against Rutgers, can do that. But, you know, you look at these teams, everybody's imperfect. Not many of them have a combo like Jalen Smith and Anthony Cowan. You know, they're arguably the best combo in the Big Ten. So, you know, this is we're getting down to, you know, serious time where we see what they really are. I think, you know, they've been really good lately. I think that game at Illinois, though, that's a next level game. You win that game, and I'm convinced you've put it together. You're a real threat to do something big this season, because I think Illinois is really good. It's really hard to win on the road. So that, to me, will say a lot if they win that. I think they'll probably be a 5-point underdog in that one at least, but that'll be the big test. Obviously, you win that, and then you're in pole position for first place.
You heard it here first. Jeff Ehrman says win over Illinois means Maryland going to the Final Four.
You know, I think it'll prove a lot, because I've been bullish on Illinois for a while. I think they're potential Final Four team, arguably the best team in the conference. They really had they pretty much beat Maryland at home, and that was, you know, a huge miracle for Maryland to pull that one off. At the time, it seemed like it was going to be a really bad loss if they had lost it. You know, that's going to be, and they always seem to play Maryland tough every year, no matter what they have. It's hard to remember many. I'm sure I'm forgetting one or two where Maryland won somewhat comfortably. For the most part, they've played a lot of close games. That one earlier this year, there was one in overtime at Illinois last year or the year before when Cowan went crazy. I think Fernando had to put back at the buzzer to send it to overtime. So they always play Maryland tough, but, you know, those are arguably the two best teams in the Big Ten, you know, along with Michigan State, because we know what Izzo always does.
Yeah, they've looked like Bud a little bit this season, though. like later in the season than you'd expect for an Izzo team. You know, obviously Winston's good, but the other dudes, I don't know.
You're right, they have. It's just I've said it before, every time I bury them, he goes to the Final Four, so I'm scared to say anything. They really don't look like... And he seems to be falling apart a little bit, too. He went off on their fans for criticizing players.
Yeah, that was weird, man.
Yeah, that's weird. When you know it's starting to get to the coach. You know, things are he's starting to feel the pressure.
Yeah, that's really strange. It's like a reverse Turgeon thing over there. You know, they play like butt, and you just expect they'll get to the Final Four anyway. Whereas Maryland, they play great, and you're just like, you know, they'll be on the round of 32.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and Maryland's got them twice in the final, you know, whatever it is, seven games.
Yeah, they'll find out how that works soon.
Exactly. So we'll see who's better between those two pretty soon.
Yeah, there's a lot to like about what you've seen with Maryland recently. There's a lot to not like, too. We'll get the like first. The like first, Anthony Cowan, I swear to God, had the quietest 31 points in the history of college basketball against Iowa. Like, literally, he's up there putting up a career high, and I swear I would have bet anything he had less than 20 points by the end of that game. It was the probably the best, most efficient Cowan performance I can remember in quite some time.
Well, part of it, he gets those quiet 20-point or whatever point games. Part of it is because he gets to the line so much.
Yeah.
I think he's gotten the line, like, it's almost Melo-esque. I meant to look at the numbers and see how he compares to Melo, especially that first season when he was just constantly at the line 10 or 12 times a game. He can't be too far off. It was something like 150 free throws attempted, comfortably ahead of the next guy in the Big Ten as of a few days ago. So that's a big part of it. You know, he hasn't really been shooting the ball that well is the crazy thing. You know,
his shooting percentage,
I don't think so. He hasn't shot better than 50% in any game.
And even from the line, he's still in the 70s, right? Or he wasn't as high as he normally was in like mid 80s.
Yeah, he is a little lower. He's still, you know, top 10 in the conference, but he is down by 3 or 4%. But looking at his numbers, I got him in front of me right now. So he has not shot better than 50%. He shot 9 of 15 against Iowa. Other than that, he has not made half his shots in any game since December 1st against Marquette, which is pretty amazing. Like, so he's not
real.
It is unreal. He's not, I mean, his shooting percentage is around 37, I think, percent. But he's just getting, you know, that's not to knock him. The thing he's doing well is he's such a better point guard than before. You know, every game now is between 4 and 6 assists and like 2 turnovers, whereas it used to be like 4 assists and 4 turnovers on a nightly basis. So
yeah, and it doesn't feel like he's heisting the ball like, you know, in the way that he would before, which would lead to bad shots, which would lead to a bad shooting percentage.
Yeah, yeah, that's true, too. He's not playing nearly as much hero ball. There's still a few shots per game that you probably don't love, but yeah.
He's earned those. He's earned a few.
He has earned a few. He's much more willing to pass the ball. Turgeon's talked about that a lot too, about how much more he trusts his teammates, and it doesn't hurt obviously when you have Sticks playing like a lottery pick.
Yes, that is useful. And to me, honestly, as good as he's been on the offensive end, he's been just a wonder on the defensive end the past couple weeks. I mean, he literally sucks up every rebound. And it feels like he's good for 4 or 5 shot blocks a game right now. Like it's insane. It really feels like he has actually taken a jump here. This isn't just like a good run.
No, he's become a different player the past month. He's just gotten tougher and more confident. I mean, the beginning of the season, he's got a good 3-point stroke. He could not buy a three. He was going up soft and getting his stuff rejected, like happened a lot last year. And the past month, you know, Turgeon joked about how he finally realized that Bruno wasn't coming back to help him in the past month, because, you know, he goes up strong every game. He's making 2/3 of his shots. The last 5 games, I think he's averaging about 20 points and 12 rebounds and 3 blocks. He had 6 blocks against Rutgers, 5 against Iowa. And there's every game, there's 4 or 5 at least other times where he's changing shots too. That doesn't go in the box score. So, you know, if Luka Garza wasn't putting up such ridiculous numbers, I would say he'd be the Big Ten player of the year, and he should still have a chance. But Garza's, I mean, like 23 and 12 a game or whatever it is, it's going to be really hard to beat. Otherwise, though, he's got to be the second best player in the conference.
Yeah, they would have to continue this run through the end of the season, I think, for him to have a shot at that. He doesn't need that award. We know what he's doing, and the NBA scouts, I imagine, are paying attention too.
Yeah, they are. I talked to a friend today who mentioned that the scouts have been swarming lately. They've been in Maryland constantly and that they love him. And he'll be, you know, it's funny, earlier this season he was falling, not even earlier this season, like a month ago, he was fading on all the boards. Yeah, to like the second round. Now he's probably top 10, top 15 at very worst, maybe higher if he plays well in the Big Ten. He's become the guy, you know, he was the reason why everyone ranked Maryland so highly, largely because he looked so good in the postseason last year. And then he didn't turn into that guy early this year. And now he's becoming that All-American kind of guy. I think KenPom, you know, he has his individual player ratings. Last I looked, he was either 8 or 9 nationally in those, you know, up there with all the household names, Marcus Howard, all those kind of guys. So, you know, he's been incredible. You just hope he can keep it up. If he can keep it up and they can start to knock down some shots with the way that they play defense, you know, they really have the pieces to finally do something. But as we know, postseason, a different story, and things can be really fluky based on matchups and one-off scenario, one bad game and you're done. So, you know, I'm sure in the back of his head, I wonder if Turgeon's thinking, you know, this is all great, but it's still all going to come down to kind of a fluky, this whole deal with all this weight on my shoulders is still going to be judged by kind of a fluky one and done scenario in a month and a half or whatever it is.
Yeah, it could be 2 losses within 2 weeks that can undo the whole bloody thing.
Exactly.
But we've dwelled on that topic long enough. I think we can talk about good things for a little while longer. The one other thing I wanted to point out was Darren Morcel, mainly because he did 2 very different things in each of these games and the wins this week that really stuck out to me and basically changed the way that Maryland was playing, especially when they got some of these scoring droughts. The first thing against Iowa, when Iowa went to that zone, Morcel basically got put down on the baseline. And basically the one thing that unlocked that zone every single time was them passing to Morcel on the baseline at near the 3-point line and him immediately dribbling towards the mid key. And for whatever reason, like 3 of those guys in the zone thought that that was their guy at that point, and it just opened the whole thing. And it seemed like every time he passed the ball, it was the right pass. And that was kind of when Maryland started to take over against Iowa. And then against Rutgers, which was, you know, you had mentioned in the last podcast that the Rutgers game would be a rock fight. Well, this is like a rock fight if everybody was throwing rocks that didn't hit anything. This was not easy on the eyes, but those little runs where Morcel would make a steal and a dunk, or, you know, be an outlet for a dunk, just that type of energy gets the whole team going in a way that you just don't normally see when they're running their typical kind of half court stall ball. And I thought he would deserve some recognition for all of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's 50-50, maybe at best, that they win that game if he doesn't make that little run. They were comatose when he pulled off the 2 dunks and the putback, and then that totally woke up the crowd, forced Pikiell to call timeout. Immediately after that, I think he feeds Wiggins really nice drive and dish for an open 3. I mean, he 6 put up big numbers again. Cowan had a good game where he kind of padded things at the end, but Morcel was clearly the MVP of that game. I really don't know if they, and I'm a big Morcel. I like him. I'm kind of a sucker for the, you know, glue guy, kind of gritty, tough guy who go in and try to dunk on your head, even though it doesn't always work out. He still needs to get better at finishing. He's still an enigma with that. Like, he's so good at getting up to the basket. He's got ridiculous hops, but he doesn't dunk it at times when you think he could, like he did the other night, that 2-handed dunk. But he's gotten a lot, and his 3-point shooting, you know, people acted after that first year when he was a terrible shooter, 12% from 3 as a freshman. People acted like there's no chance he was going to get better. You know, that was just who he was. He's at 37% from 3 this year. He's not taking a lot, but that's better, I think, than anybody on the team except for Sticks. So he's really worked on his game. He's got to be a better passer. You know, next year with those guys gone, he's going to have to take on a bigger role. I still don't, you know, he's still not wired to be your lead scorer by any stretch, but, you know, he's going to probably be the leader of the team next year. So, you know, there are times still when you watch him and he has really kind of a brain dead play here and there, but it's all errors of commission instead of omission. You know, he's trying hard, and you know, he's really a vital kind of that Mouton piece. You know, a lot of people have compared him to Mouton. I think that's a decent comparison, although Mouton, you know, was probably a better scorer, but, you know, he's been key for them. And again, going into March, they don't have that third scorer. So when guys like Wiggins and Ayala aren't scoring, they really need him to help.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I don't know if this is just a Kobe Bryant tribute by Wiggins, Nayala, and Sorrell Smith, but there seems to be a lot of really bad step back in your face shots where you feel like everybody yells Kobe as they like brick one into the, you know, 200 seats. Like, there's a lot of that going on right now. We had talked about Wiggins before. Like, I'm fine with Wiggins hitting, you know, shooting like five or six relative, you know, college basketball open threes in a game. And I'm happy to just live with that because I know he can shoot whatever the percentages say. Last couple games, you've gotten like three open shots and three not so open shots that maybe aren't the best looks for him. And I swear that somebody must tell Sorrell Smith that he needs to come in and shoot immediately, like three times as soon as he gets in, or like, you know, the hostages will be killed. I don't know what it is, but feels like the bench is not necessarily pulling their weight at the moment. If there's one thing you really want to be concerned about in what is a current five game winning streak.
I think Smith, he ends up being in with a really offensively limited lineup. So he probably feels like he needs to shoot it. But he plays really good defense, doesn't take too many shots. He does come in trying it, and he is capable. I'm surprised. I mean, he was known. It's a funny thing because he was a big time scorer in high school. That's all he was known as. He ever put up huge numbers in Florida, and he's better defensively by far. He's one of their best defensive players. He brings a lot of energy with that. Wiggins, it's been really surprising because he's got a good stroke, a really good stroke. But when he misses, it's not like they're just rimming out or something like that. I mean, he misses badly on a lot of these. You know, I think one the other night just hit the backboard. I can't figure out I don't know what's going on with him. You know, I think the only theory I can come up with is that the 3-point, you know, moving the line out has messed him up a little bit. Like I said earlier, though, he has shot a little bit better lately. It's more like now it's more like 2 for 5 from three or whatever instead of 0 for 4. And then Ayal is just, you know, I talked to a friend today about him. I think it's all mental with him. You know, he's really
he's rushing his shot too. Like you can see, like, even when he's standing out there by himself, he's just heaving it. Like, he's barely getting off the ground before that ball's out of his hands.
Yeah, and it's really flat looking coming out of his hand. He's wide open on a lot of them, and they're not ever going in. I think in the last 8 games or so, he's something like 10 for 40 overall. He's shooting 24% from three overall this season, even worse than that probably lately. So it's all mental with him. You know, I think he's got a lot of kind of anxiety building up at this point about his shot, which anyone who's played sports or basketball, even on a much, much lower level, you still know sometimes when you miss, you're missing, it gets in your head and you think, I'm going to miss right as you're shooting it. And you do miss because, you know, like they always say, if you think you're going to make it or you think you're going to miss, you're right. So you got to just, I mean, Turgeon's not generally one to call guys out. He's tried to lift him up and say a lot of positive things about him. He did kind of say, you know, the other day, you know, he expressed a little bit of frustration about it, but then pointed to the fact he had like 4 assists and 6 rebounds or whatever it was. But, you know, it's at some point you wonder if he, you know, if you give Sorrell Smith maybe a few more of those minutes. The thing is, like, people say, oh, you can't play him anymore. I mean, who are you going to play instead? You know, you don't have another guard behind him. You know, Hakeem Hart hasn't played him forever. He's obviously not going to play a role this year. So it's really just Sorrell Smith. So you really have no choice but to keep playing him. You know, he's playing him a lot more on the ball, freeing Cowan up at times to get open. He's been decent in that way, but he is just really struggling.
Yeah, I could imagine there being some scenarios where you would want to put Sorrell out there with Cowan when Cowan's on the ball, because Sorrell is just 10 times the defender that Ayala is right now.
Yes.
Especially on a guy who's got some length on him. So you kind of wonder, maybe there might be a way that you can tell Sorrell to turn down the power on the microwave and maybe not chuck it every time, but go out there with Cowan and play some defense and spot up where Ayala typically does on those wings. And you might find some success that way. I'd certainly love to see some of that instead of Sorrell coming in kind of with the scrub lineup and having to play like an NBA style, you know, second team lead guard, you know, like, you know, Drew Holiday or something.
Yeah. Just doing like 4 crossovers and pulling up from like 17.
Yeah. Like college version of Jamal Crawford.
If you watch the videos, that was his game in high school, but it just has not really translated. He's really athletic. I mean, he's really quick side to side. He's got pretty good hops. Maybe next year he develops more into that 8 or 9 point per game kind of guy with more playing time. Look at the numbers. So Ayala is six of his last 32 from three. So it's like, I mean, it just at this point, it looks like he could, not to pile on, but it looks like he could just be wide open in the gym and still miss. So, you know,
that's a pretty sweet 17 or 18% clip if my math is right. So that's no bueno.
Yeah, it's pretty rough, but you can't tell them to stop shooting them. You know, if they're going to back off, you have no choice but to keep shooting them. So you just got to hope that he and Wiggins can at least get to 35% or somewhere in that neighborhood, if you can even do that. I mean, Turgeon's worried about the bench. He said that after the game the other day. He's not getting a lot. I mean, Wiggins has been better since he came off the bench. He was really struggling in the starting lineup. He's been a little better. But, you know, obviously you have Viola struggling, then you bring these guys off the bench and none of them are really scorers. Dante Scott has kind of seemed to hit a little bit of a freshman wall. He really had a rough game the other night against Rutgers. Ricky Lindo has struggled all year, you know, which I was told he looked really good in workouts. It just has not translated at all onto the court. He doesn't, when he gets the ball in his hands, he looks like he has no confidence, and usually it ends up, you know, not going well.
He's just a guy without a role right now. I mean, it feels like he was kind of shoehorned into being a big man, but I'm not sure that matches his game necessarily. And, you know, hilarity ensues, right?
He can shoot the three. He had those corner threes a couple games in a row. One of them was a 4-point play. So, I mean, I feel like he's definitely got some natural talent, but it's just not there for him right now. And then Mariel obviously is just not ready at all. Turgeon's talked about how he's not 100% or he's not fully healthy. I mean, I'm sure he's not 100%, but I think it's more just, you know,
he's a guy who hasn't played basketball in 3 years.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he got out. I don't think he played in, what, 2 or 3 games in a row, and then he got out for a few minutes the other night and missed. I think he missed the rim on a short shot and just struggled. Like, I don't know if you can expect him to really play any role of substance this season. So you add those guys up, you don't really have anybody who you can rely on coming off the bench. So you're pretty much just going to play, you know, 7 guys the rest of the way, and hope, you know, like Turgeon said in his press conference, you hope those other guys, when they get in, they can just keep the score. If you're up by 4, then keep it at 4. If you're up by 2, keep it at 2. Don't blow it like the other night against Rutgers. They came in, and that's when that lead, Maryland was up 8, and it disappeared, and they just completely fell apart after that in the first half.
Yeah, all this sounds familiar, right? Yeah. I mean, but, you know, they are what they are at this point. I mean, you keep throwing guys out there, and you just hope some things get fixed. I mean, there's no big rebuilding project in the first week of February in college basketball.
No, you just don't have any, you know, really don't have any reliable offense off the bench, except for Wiggins, if he's, you know, if he's shooting. Otherwise, yeah, it's going to have to be a short rotation, you know, as much as you can anyways, when you're playing 2 games a week, or, you know, as is this week, I guess, 2 games the next in 4 or 5 days, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's worked to this point. And, you know, like you said, college basketball is just a miserable product right now. And a lot of things that you're seeing happen to Maryland happen to other teams too. So, you know, there is something to be said about just, you know, this, every team's got giant holes. There's really no standout elite squads out there that are, you know, big favorites for the tournament. You know, throw yourself out there and see what you got. I mean, it's not a ridiculous prospect at this point.
Yeah, just hope your strengths are better than their strengths, because everybody's got weaknesses. I mean, if Styx keeps playing like he is, you know, they're I don't want to jinx them. Anytime I say something, things go down the shitter. But if Styx keeps playing like he is, they're going to be a tough out, regardless of everything else.
You heard it here first. Jeff Ehrman, beat him in Illinois, going to the Final Four.
Maryland loses by 37 at Illinois.
I mean, look, they're losing that game. Like, They're losing that game. We know they're losing that game. You know they're losing that game. And it's okay. They probably should lose that game. So
it's going to be a tough one. Illinois, I mean, they're good. Plus, they got those two big guys. So I don't know. You're going to need one of those other big guys to play well for you, which none of them have in a long time.
Yeah, they're good. It's a bad matchup. And it's on the road. Like, just don't count on that one happening, guys. Don't let it ruin your weekend. All right. Maryland plays at Illinois Friday night and Nebraska at home next Tuesday for a little bit of a respite. And then they go to Michigan State on the 15th, which I'm sure will be something to see at the Breslin Center. All right. Enough basketball for now. We are going to go and have an interview with former Maryland running back Javon Leak as he gets ready for the NFL draft. And he'll be with us in just a second. And we are back on IMS Radio. Joining us is Maryland star running back Javon Leak, working out, getting ready for the NFL. How are you, Javon?
I'm good, man. Just trying to get better every day.
That's right. I know that's been your deal ever since you stepped on campus, and now you're taking the next step to the big leagues. What have you been doing in the last couple of weeks and months after the season to kind of get yourself ready to go?
Basically just getting my body right, just eating right, you know, doing stuff like that. Just staying focused, just getting ready, and just like preparing in the best ways that I can.
Is it hard for you as a guy who's kind of leaving college and taking that next step into a professional life as a professional athlete, like a dream of yours, I imagine, since you were really little? Is it hard for you to kind of not want to like take the foot off the gas for like just a second to kind of celebrate that you've made it to this point in life?
Oh, no, not at all. Not yet. You know, I haven't made it yet. So, you know, every day you just got to keep doing the same things and just keep paying yourself like a professional because you haven't made it yet. But it's definitely a dream come true, so I can't really, you know, take it for granted. I'm just taking every day one step at a time. But it's definitely a dream come true, so I'm just taking full advantage of the opportunity.
What kind of feedback are you getting in terms of where you might go in the draft and also, you know, what things you might need to work on or that they want to see from you in order to boost your stock?
I have no idea where I'm going at in the draft. You know, I haven't heard anything like that, but I just heard they just want to see if I have good hands and, you know, my route running is pretty good. That's all the feedback I got so far.
Do you have a dream team? I know you grew up in New York. Is it a New York team or is there, you know, one specific team you grew up kind of dreaming of playing for?
Nah, but I'm a Baltimore Ravens fan. That's my favorite NFL team. I grew up watching Ray Lewis, so that's always been my favorite team.
Wouldn't hurt probably to stay there in Maryland where you've developed a lot of friends, huh?
Yeah, that would be pretty cool, actually.
Hey, Javon, so I'm curious now. You had a college 3 years at Maryland, a college experience where you came in with a guy like Anthony McFarland, and you've had a running back room where, you know, basically you've been surrounded by all types of other talented backs. How did that affect you as a player and preparing yourself and trying to make yourself better and kind of get noticed by the NFL scouts, you know, when it's a situation where you know you're not necessarily going to get 25 or 30 carries a game?
Man, it kind of just made me better as a better football player. It made me a patient person. I learned a lot about myself dealing with that stuff. So, you know, those guys end up being some of my best friends now. But you just know that, like, when you get in the game, you only got a couple opportunities to do what you could do. So, you know, you got a guy just as good behind you or in front of you, so you got to make the most out of that opportunity. So we never hated on each other. We just, whenever whoever got the carry, just did what you can do with it because, you know, somebody else is coming in that could do the same thing. So it's kind of like you got one chance to show what you got, and then you know somebody else is going to come in. So I think just made me a patient person and just made me play to my best of ability every play.
And those of us who watch you on a weekly basis at Maryland, I mean, all you did was make plays last year, one of the top running backs in the country in terms of yards per carry, you know, big yards per carry, even from your freshman year all the way throughout your career. Do you feel like nationally, though, people are sleeping on you a little bit?
Yeah, I do. But my whole career, I've been that. So, you know, I just use that as fuel to just keep going, just keep working hard, and just any chance I get an opportunity to just show the world what I got, you know, I'm going to do it. So that's what the combine is for, and, you know, I'm looking forward to it.
Javon, I'm curious about last year's Maryland team. It was really disappointing season in the end overall, but it felt like, at least from the outside, you guys really had kind of worked up ahead of steam. And even though the Temple game was a disappointment coming off the big win against Syracuse, there was something that felt about that Penn State game that might have just really took the air out, the wind out of your sails. Do you feel like that had a real detrimental effect towards the season? Like y'all really felt like you were going to get that one and it just fell apart on you?
I mean, yeah, we kind of let that one slip, but we also had a lot of injuries, you know, to the team that hurt us a lot. A lot of big players that kind of just got hurt at the wrong time and kind of just hurt us as a team. But we definitely had a couple games that we let slip, but you know, I love that team so much, and we just kept fighting throughout the whole season, trying to get as many wins as we could. But like I said, we just had a lot of injuries that kind of hurt us throughout the season.
And how much of a role did it play in terms of the struggles of last season? Just everything the team had been through the previous season, I'm sure being emotionally exhausted from all of that and having so many coaching changes, so no continuity, and you know, trying to keep everybody still motivated at the same time. How much of a was that really a big obstacle, you know, in addition to the injuries and other things?
Yeah, definitely was. You learned a lot as a team. We had to, you know, stick together throughout all those moments. It was definitely hard on us, but I felt like as a team, as a brotherhood, we stuck together through it. Even though, you know, the record wasn't what we wanted, we grew as a team. We grew to, like with each other. We knew that we was all there for each other. So it definitely hurt us with the record, but as a team, we loved each other and we were there for each other through all that adversity.
So, Javon, in the end, you ended up playing for three different head coaches in these 3 years. How would you describe how Mike Locksley runs his program as compared to the other two? And I don't mean that as like as a gotcha question, just every head coach kind of has like a different way that they run things. Some guys are more players coaches, some guys more disciplinary. Like, how would you describe the difference between Mike Locksley and when Durkin and Matt Canada were running things?
Man, I love Coach Locks. You know, he's a football head. He's a good guy. He's there for you. But, you know, he knows what he's doing. He's a freaking great recruiter. He gets guys in there that need to get in there. But, you know, Coach Locks, he's definitely getting Maryland on the right track. I feel like the program is going in the right direction with Coach Locks. So, you know, he knows football. He knows the area. He's trying to keep everybody from Maryland in that area. So, I feel like Maryland is in really good hands with Coach Locksley. Coming from Bama, having the offense that Coach Locks has, you know, I feel like they're definitely going in the right direction.
And the previous year, you know, do you feel like all the talk about the culture and toxic culture and all these things were overblown? Or do you feel like, you know, that was accurate and it was time for a change looking back on things?
No, I don't think it was accurate. I feel like, you know, they blew it up a little bit just because everything that happened. But, you know, with Coach Locksley coming in, he definitely cleared it up a little bit, you know, had the team going in the right direction. But, like I said, I don't feel like it was a toxic culture. But with Coach Locksley there, I definitely feel like that's definitely not going to be the headline for Maryland football no more.
So, Javon, you know, you've been on the team for 3 years. Tell me the name of a guy, like maybe one of those young guys that maybe Maryland fans haven't seen a lot of yet that you think is going to blow up and be a big star for Maryland in the next couple years.
I got about two guys. I got Jayshon Jones and Dante Demus. I feel like those guys are going to have great careers as receivers. You know, Jayshon, he got hurt, so he couldn't really show too much this year. Like I said, that hurt us too. He was a great player. Dante, he was just getting started. He's a young guy, but I feel like this year they're going to have breakout years. Just keep an eye on those two guys.
And looking at the running back room, it's going to be completely different than it was the past few years. You're gone.
Yeah.
McFarland's gone. Obviously, Lorenzo Harrison retired. Who do you feel like, obviously, I'm sure you haven't been studying film of the new recruits or anything like that, but out of the guys who are still there, who do you feel good about, you know, getting a lot of carries next year with you guys all gone?
Man, all of them. I feel like they're just going to split the carries. We got Jake Funk, who's going to be a great leader for us. He's always been that type of guy. Tayon Lee Davis, he's a great back. He's going to get a lot of carries, I feel like. But, like, I feel like they're just going to do the same thing we did the last year, just, you know, share the ball, find a role for everybody to just be involved in the offense. But all those guys in that room, even the freshmen that I heard are coming in, are pretty good. So I know Coach Locks is going to find a role for everybody to just get the ball and everybody to eat, just like he's always done with the previous backs he's had here or at Alabama. So I know he's going to make it, like, find a way to make it work.
All right, Javon, so both you and Anthony McFarland did get invites to the Combine in Indianapolis, I believe at the end of the month. Do you have any specific goals for the Combine? You know, maybe a 40 number you want to hit, you know, a weight that you want to hit, so, you know, a bench press, something like that? Or are you just trying to go out there and throw out what you got?
Man, I'm just trying to go do my best, man. I really want to run a fast 40. You know, that's really what I'm focused on, just running a real high time. And like I said, just focus on my route running and catching and just try my best out there. That's all I'm focused on.
Now, do you and Ant have a bet on who gets the higher draft pick? Are there any shenanigans going on in there?
No, I say we have a bet on, like, who runs, like, the faster 40. We always had that argument, like, who's the faster guy. So, you know, stuff like that.
And who is?
Stuff like that.
Yeah, who's the faster guy?
We don't know.
You got to tell us now.
We never raced.
We don't know. Give me a break. You know.
Everybody knows.
Yeah, never raced.
I don't buy that for a second. Raised. I don't buy that for a second.
Swear,
but I'll
swear,
off
I swear.
Either he's
swear,
Tumble or it's McFarlane. What's your favorite memory when you look back on your time at Maryland? Is there one thing that stands out to you in terms of, you know, warm memories?
I'm not going to lie. The Penn State game, we had the sold out crowd. And that's when we first got introduced to the tunnel. And, like, just that whole crowd was just crazy. I'll never forget that. It was a sold-out crowd. We were wearing all black. It was a blackout. It wasn't the results we wanted, but that first time coming out the tunnel was just – it was a crazy feeling. And then when we beat number 21 Syracuse at home, that was a great feeling.
Yeah, I know that was a good feeling for us too. I can tell you that. Javon, yeah. I appreciate you giving us some time out of your day. I got one more question for you. Basically – when you're looking ahead, and if you're trying to recruit somebody to Maryland, help Coach Locks out, tell a high ranked kid right now from wherever why they should go play football at the University of Maryland.
Man, you got a great head coach. You got a great supporting staff with Coach Brooks, Coach Montgomery. You know, definitely all those guys. Maryland just puts you in a position to win off the field and on the field. You can get a great degree from a great university. Like I said, the football team. It's a brotherhood. It's more than just football. You know, some of those guys you're going to be with for the rest of your life. You're going to know for the rest of your life. So it's creating bonds. Like I said, Coach Locke's going to put you in the best position to make it, man. He's going to do what he got to do for you and try to get you to that next level if that's a goal for you.
All right, awesome. I'm sorry. Unfortunately, my eligibility has played out, so I can't join. And I'm pretty sure I'm not being offered a scholarship either. But, Javon, look – thank you for your time. We wish you the best of luck. And when you and Ann are dapping it up at the Pro Bowl in a couple of years, you come back on the show and we'll talk some more.
Hey, definitely, man. Appreciate you guys for having me.
All right. Thanks a lot. Good luck, man.
Good luck, man.
All right. I appreciate it.
All right. And we are back. Javon Leak, thanks for joining us. That was a lot of fun. One of my favorite Terps. I know Jeff's been pumping him up a lot. While the season was going on, before the season as an NFL prospect. And I think you're pretty comfortable with where he is right now. I think he's probably play his way into the second day if he has a good combine result.
Yeah, I think he's between he and McFarlane. I would take him first, to be honest. He's got more size, more durability. You know, I think he's going to be a really good NFL player.
I can tell you one thing. If he can post a 40 time anywhere near to what Anthony McFarland's is, that's a game changer for him, I think.
Yeah, he should be, you know, fourth, fifth round, maybe, I would think. You know, I'm not one of these NFL draft junkies, but I think he's the next guy, we've said it a million times, who is overlooked at Maryland, kind of like DJ Moore and Darnell Savage. And then all of a sudden people are like, whoa, this guy's really good.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, that was cool that he was able to join us for a little bit. Ahmed Ghafir, as opposed to players leaving, we're talking about players coming in. As most of you probably don't know, Wednesday the 5th was the second signing day, what used to be kind of the big event now that's been had its thunder stolen from the December signing day. Ahmed, tell us who Maryland signed and where they stand with the 2020 class at this point.
So Maryland, they landed two signatures today. One was from Lackawanna, three-star offensive tackle, Amelia Moran. The other was from Iowa Western, three-star defensive tackle, Almosi Titi. So those were the two signatures coming in. Obviously, Maryland had two other commitments. One was wide receiver from Potomac High School, Corey Deitches, and the other was offensive tackle from Flowers High School, Santana Saunders. Saunders, we had mentioned on the site a good bit. He was sort of some academic requirements for Maryland admission, not NCAA qualifier. So he was working on that and was slated to gray shirt. But Old Dominion had actually brought him in for an official visit, and he opted to flip his commitment. So he signed with Old Dominion today. So he will not join Maryland's class next year. And Corey Dykes, he's the only one that kind of is in limbo right now. There's some things that he's kind of working on his end, but he is the last of the uncommitted 2020 kids. But I would say overall, you know, this is kind of an uneventful January or February signing period, excuse me. But I would say that's just more so attributed to just the whole shift in recruit with the early signing period. You just don't see a lot of times now that schools really have a lot of spots to fill this time of year. But kind of moving on to 2021, it's been kind of one after the other with Maryland. It's been a pleasant surprise. They added today an HVAC tight end, a commit from St. Francis, Joseph Burns. He's the second, actually, from St. Francis, joining Zion Shockley, who also committed last weekend. Maryland also added St. John's running back, Antoine Littleton, who I've seen a couple times, and I think his skill set is going to be a very, very welcome addition to College Park. I would
say right there for 1 second?
Go for it.
Everybody go find this kid's tape, because if you're an old guy, like older than me and Jeff, we're old, but I mean older than us, it's like William the Fridge Perry, except like this kid can actually run. I mean, when they say, yeah, I mean, he might have a couple pounds on the bus. So yeah. Calling him the little bus might be setting him a little lower, but this kid,
that'd be the worst nickname ever.
It's fucked up, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty impressive. It's kind of watching him. I mean, I know coming into the season, he actually transferred from Eleanor Roosevelt his freshman year, and just kind of watching him, you know, I've gotten a chance to cover him for a couple of years now, and really the buzz since he got to St. John's was that he's going to be a linebacker, but, you know, him taking offense to people calling him a linebacker is not something new, something that I remember dealing with when he was a sophomore. Just kind of watching someone with that size and the way he moves, it's impressive to see how light on his feet he is and the ability for him to change direction. And as Doan mentioned in his analysis, good luck trying to tackle him in the open field. I mean, especially one-on-one, I would say I don't know if I've seen someone be able to take him down just one-on-one. It's always been a group of defenders around him, but so I really like him. I think with the running back room the way it is, I think he's going to be, again, a very welcome addition.
Yeah, and he's the type of guy where, like, I think he's listed around 6'2", 260 or 265 right now. You put him in a weight room and on a diet and get him down to, like, 245, like, he's going to be Ron Dane. Like that's the type of, you know, talent. Now that, you know, it's not as easy to translate that directly and to make a kid do that type of transition, but I mean, he's got the type of athleticism in a big man that you typically don't see. And it kind of feeds into what at least I feel like I've seen with not only the 2020 guys, but especially the 2021 guys. And this guy, Joseph Burns, fits into this. It looks like Loxley is really starting to recruit Big Ten style players, bigger, stronger guys, instead of the kind of like skill type. You know, I mean, I don't want to say they're not skill players, but it feels like instead of getting a lot of these 5'10", 165 guys who are ridiculous skill athletes, he's getting some beef and some muscle in here in a way that maybe Maryland hadn't seen in a while.
Yeah. And I would actually say that it's just, I've got a chance to watch him a couple of times just because St. Francis is also so close to me. But he's just very physical. He's a great blocking tight end. And one thing that you kind of notice with Maryland's current tight end room, obviously they missed on a 2020 target, countless targets, but they missed on their final one with Tyler Neville opting to sign with Harvard today. But Maryland doesn't really have a good blocking tight end, especially with Tyler Mabry off to the NFL now. So I would say that this is a great add. And I remember talking to Coach Messe last week, the day after he got the offer, or maybe it was on Sunday, and he really, really raved about this kid's physicality, his work ethic, kind of what he brings. So I know that Maryland was the only offer. He did jump on it just 4 or 5 days later, but I really like this addition. I think this is going to be a guy that, you know, maybe we don't hear too much about going into the beginning of his freshman year, but by the end of it, he'll be playing lots of meaningful snaps when it's all said and done.
Now, Med, would you consider yourself surprised by the early success of the 2021 class? Do you feel like, I mean, I think we talked about this before where we felt like giving Loxley 2 years at a class as opposed to 1 year was going to have some natural benefit anyway. But do you feel like they're maybe a little ahead of the curve with these guys? You know, Tazy Johnson maybe being the only, you know, somewhat elite get at this point. That feels like there's a lot of doors opening for Loxley that might not have been, we might not have felt would have been there so early in his career, especially after a disappointing season.
Yep. So I would actually 100% agree with that. I would say, and I noticed today, I was going over some old Loxley quotes, and one thing he pointed out in the signing day ceremony in December, he said, from the day that we got here, 2021's been the class. I mean, that was the class that we've developed relationships with. We've gotten in. This is the class. So I would say that I'm surprised just from the perspective that it's the first week of February. So no, I was not expecting eight commitments at this point, especially five within the last 2 weeks. I believe that's the count. What I will say is Maryland's doing a much better job recruiting as a staff rather than just one person. So in the past, you know, Maryland fans on the site, we've seen the same names, Azar Abdul-Rahim and Chris Beatty, recruiting guys, leading guys. So I went to a couple of high schools this week, and one thing, I stopped at Archbishop Spalding today, head coach Kyle Schmidt, he highlighted how Maryland is doing a better job of collectively recruiting. He said on the first day, Coach Joker Phillips walked in. The second day, Coach Loxley, Coach Brooks, Coach Brawley, they all came in. And the third time, Coach Hoke came. And I can't remember who the other coach was off the top of my head, but Maryland is trying to do a better job as an entire staff getting to know a kid and getting to know a team rather than just one person. So I would say the longevity of the recruiting efforts and the relationships, I think that's where we're really starting to see things pay off. And even with a 3-9 record, we have a quote on from Jayon Venerable today, but he just said it's the way that Loxley talks, it's the way that he puts the vision in front of prospects and sells it and shows how they are an integral piece to that puzzle. I think that's the biggest thing. So I've got to say I'm incredibly impressed, and this has been a much more positive tune than what I was experiencing through the 2020 class.
Well, that's certainly good to hear. And talking about coaching staff and in better staff-wide ability to recruit, Maryland made a couple moves on the defensive side today. Del Kausout is out as defensive line coach. Brian Williams, who was at outside linebackers, is moving to defensive line. And Brawley Evans is now on the field staff at outside linebackers. Ahmed, Brawley's been kind of the force behind the scenes for Maryland's recruiting efforts for a while now. Finally getting on the field kind of opens up some more doors for him to really get out there and work his magic. This is a strong recruiting staff beforehand. Now it's even stronger.
Yeah, exactly. And Maryland was kind of able to take advantage in the past of having a vacancy on the staff to be able to get Brawley to go out and travel within NCAA rules. So I would say getting him into a coaching spot where he's able to lead recruits even more. I mean, he was already doing it, running point with all the junior college prospects. Like, that was Brawley. And honestly, for years, Brawley has been the guy that has really gotten Maryland's foot in the door. And then once the foot gets in the door, he kind of hands it off. He would hand it off to the other assistants. So Brawley, recruiting wise, deserves a lot of credit for a long time. And we're talking about a guy that, even when he getting back to his time at Good Counsel, he was an excellent job of recruiting. And moving Brian Williams, keeping him on staff with his Florida ties, with his Georgia ties, and even locally, I mean, he's leading the charge with the guys at Spalding. I would say that this is a very good recruiting staff right now. One of the things that I was kind of hearing was just how sad was he was a great guy. He just Maryland wanted just a little bit more energy from their position coaches. So recruiting perspective. So it sounds like Maryland was kind of able to capitalize, and they elevated former Maryland Terp Matt Robinson into Brawley's old position.
Oh, awesome. Cool. So he's a defensive analyst, I guess?
Yes.
Okay, awesome. Do we feel like this is the end of the coaching shuffle at this point, or might there be some more moves during this little gray period before you really get into spring ball?
I don't want to speak too soon because I feel like tomorrow is going to be the day that we're going to see a lot of surprises, but I am currently not expecting any. I'm not sure if Jeff had potentially heard anything else, but as of now, this was probably the worst kept secret, but this was it for me.
Yeah, I haven't heard, it wouldn't shock me if there was a move, but I haven't heard anything about anything else. I think more likely is that this is the staff.
Okay. I think that's good, to be honest with you. Everybody wants to fire everybody after a bad season, but it feels like there's been so many coaching moves and so much uncertainty in this program the last, 5, 10 years. It really might be worth just kind of saying, look, these are my guys, and we're going to go with this for a little while and see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, I would say since Durkin got to Maryland, Maryland really needs a lot more consistency with their position coaches. I mean, on the offensive line, they've had a different position coach every year since Durkin first got here. So, yeah, I mean, being able to get that consistency, I think, is critical. I understand everyone's going to be calling for defensive coordinator John Hope, but I think there were plenty of issues on the defensive side of the ball that are not just Hope. So I think being able to keep the same scheme, keep the same guys, and kind of go into year one, because last year Loxie called that year zero. So going into year one and trying to be able to build off of some success and to be able to go from that, I think is critical.
Awesome. All right. A couple things to note. It was reported by one Jeff Ehrman that looks like Johnny Jordan will stay with the team this year, which is huge news for me. And a young offensive line that was already inexperienced and needing some help just got some back, which was really needed. And it looks like Terrell Pigrome, former quarterback, has entered the transfer portal. Jeff, I don't know. That seems like a pretty understandable decision from our end. I feel like basically every Maryland fan can, if nothing else, thank him for the awesome time in Austin a couple years ago.
Yeah, and he was just a gamer. Like, he was a very confident, competitive kid. There were, I would say, 80% at least of other players, if you put them in his situation, of pretty much knowing throughout that he was going to have to pull off an upset or other guys were going to have to get injured for him to get off on the field, would have transferred well before he did. Obviously, he had his limitations. Everybody saw those. There's no reason to rehash all of those, but he was just he was just kind of a warrior guy who stuck with it. And then the funny thing is, he would have had a real chance to start next year. People don't realize that he was, if I was putting Vegas odds on it, he would have been right there at the top next to LeJean, just because he's, an unknown. We don't even know what he's capable of at this point. So that made it a little surprising to me. I think most likely he's probably going to UMass to, play for Walt Bell. Walt Bell can probably just say, hey, you're the starting quarterback. He's the one who recruited him to Maryland. But yeah, he was just a really hardworking, really confident kind of kid throughout his career. Just, I don't blame him for moving on and trying to find somewhere where he knows he's going to be the guy for his final year.
Yeah, sometimes just doesn't work out. I believe he still has at least one functional ACL, so that's good.
That's an option.
More than most, right? At least it come out of here. All right. Okay. Big, long, jam-packed show. Lots of news. Thanks for listening to us. We'll probably do this again next week. We'll wait till after the Nebraska game on Tuesday and record afterwards, unless some sort of life-changing news pops up beforehand. Thank you for listening. As always, we are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. We're all over the InsideMarylandSports.com message boards. We are IMS Radio. We are out.